This presentation is brought to you by iAwaken.org, a not-for-profit organization. We hope you enjoy the presentation. Please observe the copyright terms to which you have agreed.
This week is Shabbos Nachamu. It's the week of comforting, the Shabbos of comforting, after Tisha B'Av. It works out every year that it's Parshas Va'aschanan. And we read the Haftarah of Va'aschanan, which is from the 40th chapter of Yeshayahu. And it's the chapter of Nechama, of comforting. And it starts, Nachamu, Nachamu Ami, where Yeshayahu is instructed by the Ribbono Shel Olam to comfort his people. What I want to look at with you this evening is, what is Nechama? What is comfort? How does one comfort a person? How does it work? What is the psychology of Nechama? Particularly in the light of a little piece of Pirkei Avos, in the fourth chapter, where Rabbi Shimon ben Elozar Omer, Al teratze es chavercho bishas kasur. When your friend is angry, don't try and appease him. That's not the time. You'll make it worse. Just keep away. There are certain times when you've got to keep away from people. There are certain times when you must just let them settle down and try and sort their own problems out a little bit. And one is when a man has lost his temper. Don't try and calm him down when he's lost his temper. Wait for the temper to ease, and later on you can start trying to soothe him a little bit. And don't offer an ovel, or an oinen more correctly, nechama, comfort, when the dead body is lying in front of you. You'll make it worse. Anything you say will make it worse. There's nothing you can say to comfort a man when the body is still lying in front of you. When a man has just made a neder, an oath, don't try and discuss with him whether he really means it or not, because he'll get himself into still more hot water by the way he answers that. And when you see a man has done an avera, don't go and say good morning to him. Just make yourself scarce. Just disappear. He doesn't want to see you and he doesn't want to be seen. That's not a time to say hello to somebody. You just disappear off the scene. Certain times when the most polite thing is to do is to just disappear and leave a person alone. And these are the four periods when Rabbi Shimon ben Elozar advises us to do just that. All we're really interested in this week is the second case of Al Tanachamenu B'Shor Shemeso Mutalafono. So what is the psychology here? When his mace is in front of him, when the dead body is in front of him, there's nothing you can do to console him. The moment the body is buried, you can start nechama, you can start comforting. What happens in one moment is there such a change of psychology. There, the body is being lowered down into the grave and you still can't comfort him. And the first clod of earth and the second clod of earth and you still can't comfort him. When the body is completely covered, now you start saying, Hamakom yenachem eschem. You start comforting him immediately. What has changed? It's still only a matter of hours, possibly, since the person died, since he lost his dear one. What's changed? Why now can you comfort him, whereas half a minute ago, 10 seconds ago, you couldn't comfort him? What I want to do is show you what nechama is, how it works, and to show you that nechama is an art that one has to be able to use, not only chas v'sholom for cases of death, but also for one's day-to-day living. One needs it. And thirdly, how not to misuse it. How not to misuse the particular mechanism which is employed in Nechama. One of the first times we have the word Nechama used in the Torah is not literally in the sense of Nechama comforting. The word Nechama is used in a dual way in the Torah. It has two meanings, which apparently have no connection one with the other. Nechama means to comfort, as we've just discussed, and lenachem also means to regret. And the Mefoshim have a great deal of difficulty with a number of times that the word vayinachem is used in connection with the Ribbono Shel Olam himself, as if God, so to say, regrets having done something and changes his mind. And the various Mefoshim give different various answers. And the first time we have it is just such a case in Bereishis chapter 6, where it says after the Rabbeinu Shalom realizes he's going to have to bring the flood. Vayinochem Hashem ki oso es ha'odom ba'oretz. Vayisatzei ve'libo. And the Rabbeinu Shalom, so to say, regretted that he made man in the world, and he was depressed in his heart. He was sad. Says Rashi, Vayinochem here doesn't mean, as it would literally be translated, he regretted, but it can be taken to mean the other Nechama. He found comfort. Nechama ha'yisalafonav shebera'oi betachtoinim. The Rebbeinu Shalom found comfort that at least he only created him on earth. She'iluhayo min ha'elyonim, because if man would be more spiritual, hayo mamridon, he would have caused chaos and rebellion in the upper spiritual worlds. He not only would he have degenerated, but he would have incited the whole of God's spiritual kingdom into rebellion. So powerful was man, and so destructive could he have been, had he been created min ha'elyonim, entirely spiritual, had he been a sort of an angel. That's how destructive he could be. Be that as it may, what we see from here is the use of the word vayinochem, meaning not regretting but comforting, and we see a bit of the mechanism used too. The mechanism is really it's the glad game. Where did the glad game come from? It was Mary Poppins or one of these things. Pollyanna. That's where it comes from. It's Pollyanna. Could have been worse. That's all. That's the one method of Nechama. It's not the end of the world. It could have been worse. Man could have been an angel. And then look what would have happened. Imagine the feeling of desolation, so to say, that Rabbeinu Shalom has. Finally, he produces the pinnacle of his whole creativity, Adam, Yetzir Kapov, a human being designed, made, produced by the Rabbeinu Shalom himself, the ultimate of creation, and within a few generations, completely degenerate. The disappointment that the Rabbeinu Shalom must have felt, so to say. And the extent to which he must have felt in human terms, and it's all Dibra Loshim Keloshim B'nai Adam, the best we can do is try to envisage how God would feel were he human, because that's the only way we can relate to it. The feeling that this is the end of it, that there is no future, that nothing can be repaired, if within a few generations of Adam HaRishon, where there's been such direct communication between the Ribbono Shel Olam and Adam, everything's gone, everything's finished, everything's degenerate. His feeling must have been total desolation, total hopelessness and depression, as it in fact says, "Vayisatzei v'libo," and he was depressed. Then says Rashi, "Vayinochem," God finds a little bit of comfort. It could have been worse. Adam could have been an angel. Thank goodness I made him a human being. There's a bit of nechama in that. There's a bit of comfort in that. And even that isn't enough, really, because there are times when it couldn't have been worse. That can also happen. There are times when it really is bad, and certainly where it's so bad that the person who's involved in it feels that it can't be worse. It's very difficult for a man in his tzoras to see that it could have been worse. You know what it's like when you've got a toothache? Go and say to yourself, could have been worse. You don't think that way. There is nothing worse. And the poor dentist has to be woken up in the middle of the night, or be called back from holiday because you've got a toothache. And likewise, if you've got any other pain from which you're suffering, it consumes you totally, it envelops you totally. One little toenail can be sore, and everything all of a sudden doesn't work. A little bit of flu. One doesn't come to a shiur already, one stops learning, one's all humble, one's prepared to sacrifice because one's not feeling quite well. What's wrong? You're not seriously ill. There's nothing wrong with you, a bit of a virus you've got. The professor will tell us it's not terribly serious, or maybe he'll tell us it is terribly serious, I don't know, but a little virus all in all, and that's enough to drive one meshuggah. One feels miserable, one feels depressed, one gets on everybody's nerves. Why have you got a cold? Everybody gets cold, so what? But the one who's got the cold is totally enveloped in his tzoras, and you can't imagine anything worse. And there are things worse, and when one really gets to the things that are in fact worse, comes to a point sometimes where the person just cannot say to himself, could have been worse. And there are times when even one can't say it of others. Could have been worse. One doesn't know that it really could have been worse sometimes. We've just come through a Tisha B'Av. How much worse could it have been? Beis HaMikdash destroyed. Imagine living at that time. The Beis HaMikdash destroyed. The Jewish people scattered. The pride of the Jewish people totally brought to nothing. Torah for the future in jeopardy. The future of the Jewish people, who knows? On a lesser level, and note I say lesser, as bad as it was, immediately after the last world war, or during the last world war, what is the future? Where is it going to be? What's going to come out of all this? What will be left? Not just the millions of people, but the quality of people, the leadership, the yeshiva is just wiped out altogether, the Sforim and printing press is wiped out altogether. What's left? Go and say it could have been worse. Maybe it could have been worse, but at that time nobody's in a fit state of mind to talk about how it could have been worse. At that time it couldn't have been worse. And really, I think what we need to understand when it comes to matters of Nechama is firstly that there is no comfort when things are bad, and that's the point that Rabbi Shimon ben Elazar makes. You can't comfort a human being. It's impossible. When he's busy suffering, you can't comfort him. You can try and distract him a little bit. You can give him painkillers. You can do certain things, but those are almost physiological things. To comfort him, the spiritual concept of Nechama, whatever it is, and we're going to find out soon what it is. But whatever this Nechama is, when the man is busy suffering, Nechama doesn't work. There's nothing you can do. You can't tell him it could have been worse. When he's in the midst of it, it's bad, it's terrible, it's painful, it's suffering, and there's nothing you can do. What then is the whole purpose of Nechama? We spoke not long ago about the most beautiful thoughts of Reb Chaim Shmuel Levitz Zatzal, which I want to repeat to you because it's relevant in terms of this evening's discussion, where he brought the Gemara in Chagiga Daf Hei. And I brought you this Gemara. Rebbe Avonakit Sefer Kinnus V'Kolkari Begave. Rebbe took a Sefer Kinnus with Eicha, and he was reading inside it. It was probably on Tisha B'Av. Ki Matal Lahai Psuka, when he read this pasuk in the second chapter of Eicha, Hishlich Mishomayim Oret Tiferes Yisrael. God threw down the glory of Israel from the heaven to the earth. Just imagine that the glory of Israel was crystal glass, and was much better than crystal glass, and was much more beautiful than crystal glass. It was much bigger than crystal glass, and it made much more of a noise, and it shattered to a much greater extent than crystal glass, and it broke hearts much more than crystal glass breaks when it drops. And imagine dropping not from the table onto a stone floor, but Mishomayim Oretz, taking Tiferes Yisroel, taking somebody walking into your home and taking your most beautiful crystal set that you've saved up for years, or that you've inherited from generations, from old grannies and great grannies back it goes from Russia, taking your crystal set and climbing onto the top of your roof and throwing it down onto the ground. That's what the way Eicha describes the shattering experience of Tisha B'Av. Hishlich Mishomayim Oretz Tiferes Yisrael. The Ribbono Shel Olam took the glory of Israel and he threw it down from heaven to earth. And when he got to this pasuk, Nofel Min Yodeh, the sefer dropped out of his hand. Omar, and he said, Me'igro Ram Lebiro Amikta, from the height of heights down to the depth of depth. And we said, what's it talking about? What's this all about? What's the connection? Say, if it happened to fall at the same time. What is the Gemara making such a fuss about here? What did Rebbe see as so significant? Rebbe looked, says Reb Chaim Shmuel Levitz, at his Megillah lying on the floor, at his Eicha, his Sefer lying on the ground. And it might have been damaged. And he thought to himself, why is this Sefer damaged? Not because it's on the ground. That's not what damaged it. It is no different being on the ground in terms of its fit state to be used than it would be on the table or in the shelf. What damaged it was the fall. The Shamayim Oretz, the degree of the fall is what destroyed it, not where you land. Where you land is not that important, because you can wipe the dust off and you can pick yourself up and you can start walking again if you haven't broken any bones. But if you've suffered harm through the fall, then you can't pick yourself up anymore. And that's what Rebbe realized as he looked at his sefer lying miserably on the floor, that the fall had damaged it. Reb Chaim used to talk about the danger of falling, not because of where you land, but the hurt, the damage that can result through the fall. And really, one cannot comfort a person who's fallen. While he's busy falling, you can't watch a person down, falling down from the top of the Empire State Building, and as he's crossing the 80th floor, shout out to him, "Don't worry, it's not so bad. Olam Haba's also good. Cheer up, boy." It doesn't work like that. When you're busy falling, there's nothing you can do. All you can do is stand there and wait. There's just nothing to do. You can't comfort. Anything you say will only hurt more. Imagine you did say that to the man as he was falling. Imagine how it would hurt him and how he would suffer as a result of it. There's nothing you can do. He's falling. You just wait quietly. The thing to make sure is that when the fall is over, you help him up, that you don't leave him damaged on the ground, that you see that he's able to re-establish himself as soon as possible. That's nechama. And life is made of falls. Now, I have this ongoing argument with parents, and Emir Tzashim at the parent-child weekend next weekend, we'll have the argument a little bit further. Let your child fall, let him fall off chairs, let him fall off beds, let him fall off jungle gyms. Children are amazingly adaptable to falls, and they're quite rubbery. They bounce and they pick themselves up, and they don't damage themselves terribly badly. As long as they don't damage themselves, it doesn't matter that they hurt themselves. They must get to know that that's life. You fall. You can't have a life without falls. All you've got to know is how to fall. And Nebuchadnezzar, I feel so sorry for those children whose parents don't let them fall. Starts off not letting them fall out of their prams. Our kid fell out of the pram the other day, and I thought, maybe I should phone the doctor just in case. Finally, a few hours later, we decided, as a formality, we would phone the doctor, and the doctor basically said, please leave me alone. I've done a study on 100 kids that fell out of prams, and not one suffered the slightest injury. What's the problem? I said, no, I thought so too, I just wanted to check. I feel terribly sorry for the kids that don't fall. Because how do they learn what a fall is like? How do they learn that a fall is nikifelach? You fall, you pick yourself up. And I was taught something by another doctor too. If a parent doesn't gasp as the child falls, the child won't even cry. And that's also true. The child learns to cry when it sees the shock registered on the parent's face. Oh, what happens? And everybody runs to see this poor child who just had a natural fall. It's like walking. The child cries, but he's not crying because of the fall. He learns to cry. He learns that that's the correct thing to do. When you fall, you're supposed to feel uncomfortable and you're supposed to cry. And from then on, it becomes a psychological case which rabbis and doctors have to fix up later in life. Leave him alone. As long as he doesn't damage himself, hurt is part of life. Help him up once he's fallen. He's fallen, dust off the dust, cheer him up and get him back going. Don't stop him falling. And then try and comfort him if he did hurt himself. Let him cry a little bit, get it over with. And then you help him get going again. And so it is with adults. People are going to fall through their lives. That's how life is. We're up, we're down, we're up, we're down. And the higher we go, unfortunately, the more is the danger of falling, and the more is the proportion of number of people who do in fact fall, and the sore, the more painful is the fall. But that's part of the business of climbing. It's dangerous, one hurts oneself, but one just has to learn how to fall. One has to be careful that one doesn't hurt oneself in a fall. That's all that's really important, and that's where one human being can help another with nechama. To help him up again, that's nechama. How do you do it? Sometimes by showing him that it could have been worse. But there's another aspect to nechama too. You remember when Yaakov believed that Yosef was dead, all his sons and daughters came to comfort him, and he refused to be comforted. He said, "No, I will go down to the grave mourning my son." And his father cried for him. And the Mefarshim again talk about what is this refusal to be comforted, and some of them say it means that he wasn't prepared to listen to the words of Nechama, he wasn't prepared to listen to the words of comforting. Rashi takes it differently, he takes it psychologically, spiritually. And it's based on a Medrash Rabbo. Ein adam mekabel tanchumim al achai v'sovu shemes. If a man believes that somebody is dead, but in fact he's not dead, nechama doesn't work. Isn't that amazing? That means I can hear that chas v'sholom, a dear one is dead, and I believe it, and I have no doubt. And if it's not true, if that person in fact is alive, unbeknown to me, I won't be comforted. Nechama won't work. She'al ha'mes nigzero gzeiro she'ishtakach min ha'lev v'lo alachai. The Ribbono Shel Olam built into the Bria, into the creation, a special law of nature that one begins to forget a dead person. It starts becoming more and more put to the back of one's mind. But that's only a dead person, not a live person. For a live person, that law doesn't apply. Now, we're not going to get into a whole mystical discussion of how that works and why that works. What I'm really interested is in the concept of the Gezeira. What is the Gezeira of Tanchumin? Sheyishtakach min halev. That one forgets about it. That's Tanchumin. And when it says that Yaakov refused to be comforted, it means he was unable to be comforted. Whatever they said to him and whatever they did, he couldn't forget. We know he couldn't forget because Yosef was really alive. Yaakov himself didn't know why he couldn't forget. It was just a fact. He couldn't get over it. What is Nechama? Nechama is getting the person to forget. How? Again, it's a Tisha B'Av sort of Gemara. Or rather, a Shabbos Nachem sort of Gemara. Chfar Hoyo Rabban Gamliel, this is a Gemara at the end of Makos, Daf Kaf Dalet Amud Aleph and Amud Beis. These wonderful, wonderfully great gentlemen, Rabbi Gamliel, Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah, Rabbi Yeshua, and Rabbi Akiva, walking down the road. Can you imagine what a sight? Those four people walking down the road. The Shomu Kol Hamuina Sharoimi Mipalto Berochot Mea Ve'esrimil. And from 120 kilometers away, they could hear the celebrations going on in one of the royal houses of Rome, of the Romans. And they started crying. Rabbi Akiva was laughing. Imagine that sight. So there you see these four outstanding gedolim walking down the street. Three of them are crying, one of them is laughing. They said to Rabbi Akiva, what's the joke here? What's the big joke? He said, what's the big day of mourning? Why are you crying? These nobodies, these goyim who bow down to avodas kochovim, to idols, and bring sacrifices to them, they're able to sit in comfort and wonderful happiness and luxury. V'anu and has beis hadoim ragli lekeinu soruf ba'esh. And now the house of our God has been burnt to nothing in cinders. It lies there destroyed and desolate. V'loi nivke. And we're not going to cry. Amalei in lekachanim b'sachik. That's exactly why I'm laughing. U'mal o'ivrei ratzoinei kach. And if idolaters, miserable nobodies, have such pleasure in this world, how much more luxury and pleasure are we who fulfill the will of the Ribbono Shel Olam ultimately going to receive? There's a second incident. They were going up to Yerushalayim. They got to Harat Sofim. That's just overlooking where the Hebrew University is now, just overlooking the old city of Yerushalayim. They came up the hill and there they saw Yerushalayim down at the bottom. Koru Bigdehim, they did kriya, as one has to do when one sees the destruction of the city for the first time, and that din still applies today, unless one goes there on an Erev Shabbos or whatever, or on the Shabbos itself, or the Yom Tov. If one goes on an ordinary weekday and one hasn't been there for a month, go to the Kotel, you have to do Kriya to tear your clothes. Kivan Shigul Harabayis, when they got closer to the Harabayis, to the place where the Beis HaMikdash was, Ra'u Shu'al Shiyotzu Mi Beis Kodesh HaKadoshim, they saw a little fox running out of the Kodesh HaKadoshim, from under there where today that dome is, the Kodesh HaKadoshim, the most holy place in the world. We spoke about it a few weeks ago. From that point they just saw a little fox running out. They started crying again. They broke down into tears. Rabbi Akiva Misachek, and once again, there you had the three people in tears and Rabbi Akiva laughing. Again they said, we've just done Kriya, we've torn our clothes, we've seen a fox running out of the Kodesh HaKadoshim, what are you laughing at? What are you crying at? Just look at the emotions of these people, the place about which it is written, Yumas. A stranger, that means not only a goy, but even a Yisrael, a Jew, and not only a Yisrael, a person who's not a kohen and who's not a kohen gadol in the case of the Kodesh HaKadoshim, anybody who's not on the pinnacle of Kedusha who comes near this place, Yumas, must die. They are Shav Shualim Olchu Boy, and now little foxes run around there, the Lo Nivke, and we're not going to cry. Strange you should say that, says Rabbi Akiva. That's exactly what I happen to be laughing at. Dichtiv, and he brings a little piece of Tanakh which he goes into, which basically says that the prophecies of Yeshua, of Nechomo, the prophecies of comfort and salvation are tied to the prophecies of doom and destruction. Ad shaloi niskayim nevuoso shel Uriyo hayisi misyare shaloi tiskayim nevuoso shel Zechariah. Until the prophecy of Uriah has not been fulfilled, that was the prophecy that the Yerushalayim will be like a plowed up field, desolate and empty. I was afraid, says Rabbi Akiva, that the prophecy of Zechariah would not be fulfilled either. Ashav shiniskayim nevuoso shel Uriyo. Now that I see the fox running out and I see everything going according to plan, this is the distraction about which Uriah spoke. I know now that Zechariah's prophecy will also come true and the Mashiach will come and the Beis HaMikdash will be rebuilt and everything's okay. There's nothing to cry about. And this is what they answered him. Akiva nichamtanu. Akiva nichamtanu. Akiva, you have comforted us. Akiva, you have comforted us. That's how he was Menachem. And I think this Gemara is terribly important in teaching us how one is Menachem, because all the Gemaras in the sugyas of Avelus, of mourning, just say you've got to talk Nichumim, Divrei Nichumim, you must comfort, but nowhere does it tell us how you do it. How do you comfort a person? What's the right thing to try and do? What do you try and aim for? And everybody finds themselves in this position. Okay, we have the formal little phrase, Anokim Yenachim Eskim B'tel Shara V'Litzion V'Yerushalayim, which we say, but that's really a tefillah, it's a prayer that may God comfort you. But we also have to comfort the Ovel. What do we say in order to comfort the Ovel? I think here one finds an approach. How did Rabbi Akiva comfort his Chaverim? These three outstanding men who were walking with him and were in tears with broken hearts, how did he comfort them? Really, quite simply, he showed them a future. That's all. He showed them the world hasn't come to an end. And that's the most dominant feeling of Avelus, the finality. Things are over. Our old life can't continue anymore. Normally, one day follows the next. You carry on doing tomorrow what you were doing today, more or less. Each day continues one on the other. When there's been a tragic loss, Chas v'Shalom, that changes. You can't carry on the way you were. And the feeling is not, I need to change. The feeling is, my life is now over. Everything that's been happening is now finished. Because such an important element in my life is now missing. There's a link in the chain which is not there. It doesn't operate. It doesn't work anymore. And one of the most devastating feelings of an other is the feeling that the world is in fact continuing. He feels resentful about it, in fact. And Ovel stands with his mace, Mutal Lefonov, and you come and you menachem him, and he says, when you're finished, where are you off to now? Yes, I'm going to work. It's devastating for him. I've just lost this. You're going to work as if nothing's happened? You take him to the window and you show him, you know, look, cars are going, where do you think? They're all going to town to work the same way they did yesterday and as they will tomorrow. And the town operates, and the telephone's working and the lights are working, everything's going on. It's a devastating thing to an Ozer that the world is in fact continuing. When it should come to such an absolute standstill, he finds it terribly hard to reconcile continuity with this terrible loss. And that's the nechoma that Rabbi Akiva gives. It's not all over in both cases. In the one case, he gives the nechoma. Don't worry about those Romans who've got all that wonderful luxury and pleasure. Don't think that's the end of the story. Don't think that's the last page in the book. If that's where the book ends, yes, you should burst out into tears. But there's volume two. There's another series. The play isn't over. And the next series is, if you can just imagine, project what the next series is to Rabbi Akiva. Imagine, use your imagination. These nobodies are living in such luxury. The next series is about us, how we're going to be living. How do you think that's going to look compared to this? So what are you crying about? Just see there's a future. It's not the end of the day. And he tells them the same with a shual, with a little fox coming running out. If that would be the last page of the book, what a tragedy. The fox runs out of the Kodesh Kedoshim, the end. What a tragic story. It would be heartbreaking. Imagine that Tisha B'Av didn't have a Shabbos Nachamu afterwards. Imagine Tisha B'Av was the last day of the year. Finished, that's how our year ends. Tisha B'Av. Get it from Tisha B'Av, we start a new year that will ultimately build up again to another Tisha B'Av. Can you imagine what it would be like? It's a Shabbos Nachamu. Don't worry about the Shu'al Chaverim, he tells them. It's true there's a fox running out, but that's how the story is meant to go, and that's where the first series ends. Second series continues, and luckily we've seen the fox running out because we know now that it's all going according to plan. And the plan is that in the second series the Mashiach comes, and the Beis HaMikdash is rebuilt, and Klal Yisrael come together to Eretz Yisrael again, and everything will be wonderful. Not only does he show them a future, but he shows them the connection between the future and the present. And that's what's really critical. First thing is just to know that there is a future. The second thing is just to be able to see over the hump. And Orville doesn't see, if he is able to see that there's a future, he just doesn't know how he's going to get there from where he is. And that's the nechoma. Just show him the connection between where he is. As they say in the five-star diaries, today is the first day of the rest of your life. It's not the last day of everything that's come. Everything begins now. It all starts now. And tomorrow will follow on today, no matter how terrible today has been. It's leading somewhere. It's purposeful. It has a place. You know, part of the terrible suffering in the concentration camps was the feeling that one just didn't know when it would end. Would it end? What would be after that? Is there a future? Viktor Frankl talks over and over about the mental anguish rather than the physical anguish. The physical anguish was beyond our imagination. There's only one person in this room who can understand what it was. And the mental anguish, or anguish also, is something that we don't often think about, but that he claims was worse. If they knew it was 5 years, they would tolerate it. But they didn't know it was going to be 5 years. It might have been 10 years, 20 years, 50 years. It might have been forever like that. They didn't know. And that was the thing that made it so difficult to tolerate. Imagine one could say to them, imagine one could go into a concentration camp, or certainly immediately afterwards, because we're talking about helping people up, and say, look, Rabiad, we know you've suffered beyond our imagining. We know there's no way we can put ourselves in your boots. We don't understand how you've suffered. We can't understand how you've suffered. But, just listen. Listen to what's happening. Anti-Semitism reached such depths, reached such abysmal lows, that as a result of this, and imagine one could say this to him in 1945 as he came out of the gates, as a result of this, the world is going to be free of major anti-Semitism for 30, 40, maybe 50 years, who knows? The world's going to feel guilty for a long time. There are many other results of this which we don't even know and understand, but just a simple one, easy to understand. This is going to shock and shake the world to such a degree that they could have dropped to levels such as this, that during the lull, for the first time in history possibly, 30, 40 years without anti-Semitism, that Eretz Yisrael will be established, yeshivas will be established in Eretz Yisrael, Jews from all over the world will start coming to live there, and maybe this will be the beginning to the ultimate coming of the Mashiach. Doesn't make the suffering easier, but there's a future. It's not for nothing. There's a plan. Today is part of tomorrow, and yesterday is part of tomorrow. It's all going somewhere. You've been part of a massive scheme, and you've been a very important part of that scheme. It makes that suffering not easier, but a little bit less unmeaningful, a little bit less intolerable. And that's what Rabbi Akiva did for them. That's why they said, Akiva nichamtanu. Akiva, you've comforted us. You've succeeded in making us feel a little better. Nechama is not something that one needs only for avelus. One gets into this situation, into a quasi-avelus situation, unfortunately, very frequently. One gets depressed. Things get on top of one. One feels one can't cope. That feeling of being unable to cope is just a feeling that I can't see my way from where I am to where I'm meant to be. That's all it is. There are just mountains in front of me. I just see blank. I can't see out of it. And all of us, each one of us, find ourselves in these kind of situations, particularly in the pressurized worlds in which we're operating, on a regular basis. And we shouldn't think it's our obligation only to go and comfort people who've suffered a physical loss. We should be sufficiently sensitive to notice when our chaverim, when friends, people we come across, are just in a state of depression. They just feel they can't cope. And we need to help them with nechama. The nechama is just to show them there is a way of getting from where you are to where you're meant to be. It's a very strange thing when you're walking sometimes on Shabbos, because that's the only time we walk nowadays. Just ask yourself, stop somewhere and close your eyes and ask yourself where your horizon was, and you're likely to find that it was about 6 feet in front of you. Ask yourself what you've been looking at, how far you've been looking, and you'll find if you close your eyes and just picture where you are, you'll see sort of Arab Amis around you. You'll see the four Amis where you happen to be standing. Very seldom will you have your eye physically right there on the horizon. And we should know that that's not the way to operate. Imagine driving a car looking 3 feet in front of the bonnet of the car. Just aiming the little mascot on the end of your car down the middle of the road. Carefully making sure that you're measuring the distance on the side of the road and seeing, just watching 3 feet in front of your car, that you're remaining a foot and a half, 18 inches from the pavement on the left hand side, and so you drive without looking further ahead. That's not the way to drive. You'll have an accident that way. You don't have to look right in front. You just put your eye way down the road and keep your eye there and drive, and you'll go straight. And it's not even on a road. If you're driving a boat on the seas, they'll tell you, or an aeroplane without navigational equipment, they'll just say, put your eye right on the horizon and go, and you'll drive straight. And that's the difficulty we have in navigating ourselves to our own lives. We tend to look at our bonnets just beyond our noses, and we can't see where we're meant to be going. Of course you can't see where you're meant to be going. Look further. And the ability of nechama is the ability in the midst of a difficult present to be able to look ahead and see the horizon, and still better see how to get there from where one is, and to understand that one's suffering in fact is the first step towards getting there. As difficult as it is, as much hardship as it is, we need to go through that in order to get there, and just to see the path, that's nechama, that enables one to operate. You know, finally, Rashi says that the nechama is shitcha, forgetting. The way to forget the past is to get involved in a new future. The problem with a man after a period of avelus, or when a man has lost something, he feels that he can't continue his life the same way it's been going for the last 20, 30, 40, 50 years, whatever it is. Nechama basically says to him, you're right, you can't continue the same way. There needs to be a change. But that doesn't mean you're at the end of a line. just means you have to turn around a little bit. Don't look there. You're facing a brick wall and you don't know where to go. Sure, in front of you now there's a brick wall. But just turn aside. And there's a new future. And you start involving him in this new future and showing him the connection between the present and the future, and he's able to forget the past. That's the Gezeirah. That's the special law that God created of Nechama. That through re-involvement in a new future, one can actually, the past doesn't remain so painful. And again, that doesn't apply only to losing a human being, but applies to all suffering and hardship. As one progresses and one looks back, it's not the painful things that you remember. Isn't that amazing? As all consuming as they were at the time, as things go on and as time goes on, those are the things one starts forgetting first. They start diminishing slowly, slowly, and other things start coming up in one's memory. One's left with a memory that one can handle. It's less painful. It subsides a little bit. Provided you're becoming involved in a new future. If you're wallowing in that past, you'll never forget it. The whole art of Nechama is to look ahead to that new future and become involved in it. But at the same time as it's telling us the positive aspects of Nechama, Rashi is also warning us against how Shikha works. You know, it says in the Ha'azinu, Tzur Yeladecha Teshi, the God who gave birth to you, you have forgotten. Batishkach Kelmech Alecho, I think it is, and you forget the God who created you. And I heard a pshat once given on that Tzur Yeladecha Teshi, God gave you the ability to forget. It's a gift. Imagine if we couldn't forget. Imagine if our past was as vivid as the present. There would be no Nechama. It wouldn't be possible to be comforted, ever. God gave us the ability to have things like this unpleasant memories subside. What do we do with it? We forget the Ribbono Shel Olam himself with it. We misuse the art of forgetfulness. We forget our learning. We forget our appointments. We forget our wives' birthdays. We use a gift which the Ribbono Shel Olam has given us, we misuse. And that's something we have to be careful about. Nechama is a skill to forget the past. And there's only one time it's allowed to be used. And that's when Nechama is used, when you're an Ovel. For your Shalayim, for a close one, an Ovel may use Shikha. A person who suffered terribly may use the art of projecting into the next series, projecting into the future and imagining it with clarity in order to forget the past a little bit. But only an Ovel, only a person who suffered. We tend to get distracted, and that's why we forget so much. Always a new project, always a new plan. Every day is a new day. We wake up in the morning and we've got new ideas. Now today is going to be different. It doesn't work like that. Today is no different. You're the same guy. It's not going to be different to yesterday. Today is a continuity of yesterday. And note that even with Nechama, we don't say that today is the beginning of a whole new future and forget about the past. No, we show how today will lead into the future, and you can just forget the suffering of the past. But there's still a connection. The present always joins the past and the future. We tend to be distracted with new projects, new plans, new ideas. We buy ourselves new things and we arrange new things. Always something new. All it does is it distracts us from the past and we start forgetting. We do it even in our learning. A new daf, a new perek, a new mesechta, learn something else. Always we want to learn something new. It's not how it works. As Rashi tells us next week and as we learned last year, Vahaya im shamoya tishma. In Tishma Bayoshan, if you're going to learn the old stuff well, then Tishma Bachodesh, you'll have new ideas from the old. You're not going to develop a future disconnected from your past. Nurture your past. Water it and fertilize it and develop it and make something grow out of it. Don't try and cut yourself off from it as if it doesn't exist. Don't try and distract yourself from what has been by looking. Let me turn again. That's life. It's a zigzag. Life is not a straight line. As we go, we hit these problems and we adjust and we turn and we move and we squirm and we squeeze and we expand and we work our way through. That's how we go. And the Chomo is just the ability to show the man when he's standing right up with his nose against the wall, just to take him a few steps back and turn him around and show him, oh, the wall doesn't cross right across the room. There are places to get through it. That's what the Chomo is, a change of plan. To show a man that it's possible to change a plan. And that really is what where tshuva starts. Tshuva starts in the understanding that the way I've been going is no good. That's it. I need to turn. A little turn somewhere. Not that I'm going to eradicate the past, and not that I'm going to turn over a new leaf. Let's forget about that idea. Part of the big disappointments of Yom Kippur year after year is because people try turning over new leaves. There's no such thing in Yiddishkeit. You can't turn over a new leaf. You can make a new turn. You can adjust. But don't try and adjust in a way which is as if you've just been created. You have no past. You do have a past. You have a personality. You have shortcomings. They need to be worked on. They need to be developed. It can't be done overnight. Don't turn a new leaf. Just change the direction a little bit. Have nechama. Regret where you've gone and make the necessary adjustments to ensure that you'll have nechama, you'll have the comfort of realizing that the fact that you haven't gone quite the way you wanted to this year, the fact that you haven't quite fulfilled the promises we made ourselves last Yom Kippur, it's not the end of the world. There's still something to do. We can still make an adjustment. We can still turn. And between now and Rosh Hashanah, we can start planning a future which is based on the past, but a redirected and a corrected future. A future which holds for us the beautiful sights and the beautiful promise, which is what we crave for.